Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
This episode is brought to you by Paramount Plus. Get in, loser! Mean Girls is now streaming on Paramount Plus. Join Katie Heron as she meets the plastics and Tina Fey's new twist on the modern classic. Get ready for more of the rumors, backstabbing, and jokes you loved from the original movie with some fetch surprises. Rated PG-13. Wear pink and head to ParamountPlus.com to try it free.
What's going on, everybody? Hope you are having a great week so far. I can't believe we're coming to the end of April. That is mental. Josh Butler, Jose Rosa, aka Maritime Yacht Club. I love this project. It's really interesting, and I'm actually really excited that this is happening. Josh hit me up a while ago talking about this new project that he's working on with Jose, and he sent me the music. Sounds amazing. I haven't fully listened to all of it through, but I'm looking forward to getting my ears around it. But from what I've heard, it's a very different take on what we know of Josh and Jose to have done in the past, which is really exciting to me. And I love the name Maritime Yacht Club. So I'm just going to shut up and let the boys do the talking. I really enjoyed this podcast. It was really good. We are all in different, on different cameras and in different situations, or different locations, I mean. So there might be a bit of over talk, but I think we did pretty good. So without further ado, Maritime Yacht Club. And we are live. What's cooking, boys?
All good. Well, good to see you again, man.
How's Newcastle? Not Newcastle. Newcastle. Oh my God. How did I get Newcastle and New Zealand mixed up?
Two very different places, literally worlds apart.
How's New Zealand treating you, mate?
It's been great, man. You know, I love being on this side of the world. It's very inspiring for me. It's like after all the touring during the European summer, it's a chance for me to reset and focus on writing more music.
Yeah. Jose, whereabouts are you, mate?
Just outside of Liverpool. It's about 20 minutes away from Liverpool, so not quite as exotic as New Zealand. A bit darker and drearier and not quite so inspirational, but yeah, he'll do.
Fair enough, yeah. Liverpool's pretty inspiring, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, there's some amazing music that's come from Liverpool, let's be honest.
And it's got
a great scene.
And killer fake tans. It's just made for it. made for it.
Yeah, I've not quite gone down the fake tan route yet, but there's still time, I guess.
I'm waiting for those press shots for this album, mate. I'm hoping you've gone there.
Josh is the one you want to worry about with a fake tan.
Easy tiger.
So, boys, Maritime Yacht Club. I got an email from you, Josh, about a month ago. You mentioned this a while ago, I think. after the first podcast we did, or you text me at some point saying you're doing a project. And then we set this up, and kind of, I didn't really know what the hell was going on. I didn't know what was going on until kind of like last week. I was like, what the fuck is going on? And then you sent the music over to me this morning, and I between podcasts, I've managed to listen to parts of it.
Awesome.
So I'd kind of like you guys to explain what Maritime Yacht Club is, because I love the name. It's kind of a vibe.
Cool. I'll let Joe take the lead on where the project came from. Go on.
Over the years, Will, Josh and I have been quite close friends. So obviously it's coming up to the 10th anniversary of the Got a Feeling release. It's Josh released.
By the way, Jose was the voice of Got a Feeling. He sang the vocal hook on that.
I've also been saying your name wrong. I apologize.
To be fair, Will, I get called all sorts of lines. People struggle to get it right. So just think of like Mourinho, Jose Mourinho. It's a,
Jose
the same
Mourinho.
Way, like, yeah.
There we go.
So, yeah, so Josh and I have been friends for way over 10 years. Mm. Just sort of done a couple of projects together. Obviously, Got a Feeling was absolutely massive at the time.
Yeah.
And then the project really came about during lockdown, started initially there. And I don't mind discussing it on the podcast, but at the time, my wife was battling with terminal cancer.
Damn.
So for me, it was just like having an outlet to focus sort of my energy into music again, because with her being ill, she was ill for around 4 or 5 years. I kind of put music on the back burner for a little bit.
Mm.
And then she passed away in 2021, just before Christmas. So really, the project sort of came into fruition around that, and me and Josh spending some time being creative with each other, and it was really a sort of focus for me to sort of pull myself out of a bit of a real difficult time. And I hope that sort of comes across in the music as well, because a lot of the music was written around that time period, and so hopefully people sort of buy into the project and take something from it, because personally it's been a real amazing outlet for me to sort of focus my energy, really. So yeah, Josh and I, we just sort of banged our heads together, and the project just grew from there.
Sick.
It wasn't intended on being an album, really, was it?
No,
we were just making tunes, and then we probably had like 4 decent tracks that was sounding like kind of consistent, and we were like, shit, there's actually something forming here. So we just continued to meet up like once, twice a week, and that was that, really, wasn't it? We ended up with like 12 tracks.
Yeah, it just kind of snowballed, really. We were just, creative juices were flowing, and we were just banging tunes out left, right, and centre. And before we knew it, we had an album on our hands. So it was quite a good position to be in, really.
Did you boys, when you're writing the album, I've had a lot, like this whole month of podcasts is literally seems to be people talking about fucking writing albums, which is amazing, because it's like we live in this strange time where albums are kind of not gone out of fashion, but especially in the electronic world, albums are kind of no longer to a certain extent.
Yeah.
And purely just because of how they are streamed and how they are consumed. But it seems to be that they're coming back, which is music to my ears, really, because I love albums. Josh, I know you said it wasn't intended to be an album, but at what point were you like, well, this is an album?
Oh, it's a tough question, though. I think we probably had like 5 or 6 tracks together. For me personally, I've, with my solo career, I've only ever released singles for 10 or 15 years now. So with this new project, it just felt more like an album project where, because it's more listenable music, it's more streamable and home listening music, I would say personally. It's more song-based.
Yeah.
So rather than like club bangers and singles every month or every 6 weeks, you know, it felt better to package it as an album.
I totally agree, because I think although you're releasing singles at the time, so the way you're releasing the album is you're doing like, from what we were talking about before, and you're doing like 6 or 7 singles, and then you're going to release the whole album as one, right?
Yeah.
Like, you're still technically releasing it how we would release singles, because you're 6 singles in a year, right? It's still a lot of singles.
Yeah, I think because of the way people consume music through Spotify and all that, you kind of have to do that to a certain extent to keep the internet sweet.
It's a shame, really, how, you know, the world's moving. It's not as exciting as going down to the record shop and buying an album anymore and having a physical, you know, LP in your hands. The market's changed so much. And you know, it's all about streams. There's not a lot of money in sales anymore of actual music. It's all around the streams, and trying to get your music to an audience through the new channels it can be quite tricky. But I think, especially with the influence social media has on the music world now, you know, all it takes is one video on TikTok, and the next thing you know, you're in the charts. Yeah. So the world's moved in a very different way the last few years, I think. But it's exciting on the other end as well.
It's about trying to find a balance between a traditional album release and the new digital form of releasing.
Yeah, it's tough, isn't it? Because I think, like, an album is a fuck ton of music, and people don't like listening to a fuck ton of music from one artist nowadays. Sadly, it's just the algorithms don't let you, really. You put on Spotify and you just, like... It happened to me the other day. Like, I was listening to Action Bronson, and I was pressed Action Bronson, and then like four records in, it gave me like some other rapper, and I'm like, I didn't ask for this person. I asked for Action Bronson. Like, what are you doing to me? It was a good record. The algorithm knew me, but it was like, it's a bit weird.
Not what you asked for.
Exactly.
Do you know? In a way, they were kind of like that to some extent, because I found so many artists that. Wouldn't necessarily listen to
really
true, you know, suggestions on Spotify or whatever. So sometimes I think it can be quite useful to find an artist that you know, you never may really find. But I think for us with the album, every track is very unique to itself. So it's quite a diverse range of sort of mixture of genres, and there's a lot of live instruments in there, which I think. In electronic music, you're kind of missing a blend of, you know, electronic produced and sequenced, but also, you know, there's a number of songs where we've got live guitar on there, we've got live saxophone.
Yeah.
So I think musically, it's very diverse for us. So hopefully, you know, people can listen to it who are into all sorts of genres, and they pull something out of it, really.
Well, I think that's the whole point, isn't it, for an album, is allowing yourself to just not write. Like in our world, it's very easy to just write singles, like Josh was saying, just write club bangers that just work for one thing and one thing only. Where for me, like, an album is more so like marketed to people doing the dishes, people going on a drive, people going on a run, if you know what I mean. It's like your Sunday morning listens when you just wake up. But like, I think that for me personally is like what an album is, and I don't want to listen to club bangers when I'm doing that all the time. Maybe one or two to like get the juices flowing, but like not every single record on an album.
Yeah, man, that's it. And you know, I obviously love writing club bangers, but I also have the other side of me that writes more musical stuff. Yeah. And that's usually been the stuff I've done with Defected over the years, the more like soulful song-based stuff. But this Maritime Yacht Club has been such a good outlet for me as a producer to flex a little bit and write songs as well as just like making beats.
It's game changing, man. It's like having the opportunity to do that as well is really nice. How are you going to releasing it? I know by the time this podcast comes out, you've started releasing some already. But how is it going to be, just Maritime Yacht Club, or is it going to be both of your guys' names and Maritime Yacht Club? How are you going to kind of overcome that?
I think it's just Maritime Yacht Club, mate. Yeah, we're going to, I mean, we're obviously associated with the project.
Yeah.
But we're not going to like be in the title of the name. Yeah.
That's interesting.
Yeah, it's a bit different, isn't it? I mean, it's a bit of a weird name. It's a quirky name, but it suits the style of music as well, I think.
Yeah. I think I just respect it because it's like, everyone has aliases nowadays, but then everybody that has the alias then just puts their original name on the Spotify tag so they get the streams. And it's truly not an alias that way. It's truly not another project, because you're just associating both names with the new name, and it just feels a bit like of a cop out.
Yeah, I get it. Like, because back in the day when, like, I always think about Masters at Work and Kenny Dope, you know, he had so many aliases that you lost track of him, and half of them you never knew were him. But there were just different outlets for him to do different styles and release more music and sometimes get around contracts as well.
Are you, any of you in dodgy contracts that you're the reason why you're doing this?
No, we're not, but I think it's worth mentioning that we are self-releasing all this music because we'd got a feeling we didn't have any representation at the time. Mm. We didn't sign a great contract.
Did you hear the Bontan podcast?
Yeah. I'm being a bit more diplomatic than Andy was.
Mate, he was shitting himself so much. He's like, oh, you got to take out. I'm like, dude, you're absolutely fine. Like, there's nothing to worry about. But
bless him.
I think we've learned quite a lot from that, really, as well, haven't we? Because at the time, it was just so exciting. Like, this deal was coming in, and it was growing and growing and growing. I think we just got a bit excited and a bit juvenile into the industry, I suppose. So I think now we've kind of more focused with sort of a business mindset and what's going to work for us.
Yeah.
Well, self-releasing is a lot more possible these days as well. Yeah. Like 10 years ago, it wasn't quite as easy to do.
Yeah, to get your label on Beatport alone years ago was like practically impossible. I remember when I started a label 2008, briefly. And it, like, you had to, like, apply to get in Beatport. It was just, like, a thing. And, like, they would have to listen to the music you're putting out and they'd have to, like, say if it was cool enough. And if it wasn't cool enough, they wouldn't put you on. And I'm just like, what the fuck? Now it's, like, just a free-for-all and anyone can release anything. It's definitely seriously. Different. But going back to contracts, I think it's actually the best thing about this industry is that when you're young and shit's popping off, you just sign shit. Because realistically, it's like, it's the best option you've ever had. And you know what? Who are you even to say, no, I'm worth this, or no, I should be getting this deal, or I should be getting that deal? It's like the whole point of it, right?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Like, would you take back Got a Feeling if you would get a better deal? But
No, I wouldn't, because I didn't have a better deal than that at the time.
So. Yeah.
But it's only later you learn when the record's successful. It's like, actually, you know, we probably could have done better out of that, but you live and learn, don't you?
Yeah, and then also I guess it's like, well, look at all the touring that happened out of it and all of that. It's like, it's the reason why we're talking today at the end of the day. It's the reason why we all know each other. So yeah, it's amazing. The one record on the album that I can remember off the top of my head that like was like a special one for me was Faded. Is that correct?
Interesting. Yeah. That is what. Yeah, it's one of them. It's not one of. That's probably the one of the quicker ones that came about, isn't it?
It's funny you say that because Josh himself, we were just talking before, and it's in a similar scenario. They Got a Feeling. You just don't know which tune people are going to really grab hold of or enjoy. And when we had like listening groups and people who have had an influence on the sort of outcome of the album, everyone said they like a different tune.
Yeah.
So for us, it's almost like choosing your favorite child. Like it's really hard for us to say which one we prefer. But all of them have been so sort of adventurous in the studio when we've come up with them, and they've just kind of really flowed. We haven't tried to sort of force anything. Faded, we did in a couple of hours, really, initially with the first sort of the structure of the song and how it came about. And then, so I think every tune we've done, it means something to us in a different way. It's the same with like Got a Feeling. We never had any idea it was going to do what it did, and the one you might think might do well might be a complete flop, so it's really hard to sort of pinpoint. Really,
it's the weirdest situation with this industry or with life, isn't it, where you write this record and you're like, oh my god, this is an absolute bomb. It like you play it in your sets, you play it to people and like, yeah, this is the one. you release it and like it just flops massively. And then the one record that you don't think that you're like, yeah, this is all right, is what it is. We just did it in half an hour and it's pretty easy. Anyone could replicate it. Smashes.
Yeah.
I think there's
no greater feeling in the world than making something that, you know, you've completely created and then seeing people enjoy it to a different level. So I think that's sort of the main goal of this project really is in the hope that people, the listener will take something from it and whether that be an emotional connection to the music and the lyrics or whether that just be they just like the tune,
the
fact people would enjoy it. I think that's the real goal for us with the project.
Totally. Did you guys have more records and cut them down or were you like, no, this is it and we're just releasing them?
There was a couple. There was like maybe two or three other ones that didn't make the cut, but there wasn't that many. Most of them were like refined over time. I reckon like the 12 that we got, the initial ideas were laid down in a couple of hours.
Yeah.
And then we spent months just refining them and mixing them and like re-recording little sections here and there. So yeah, we kind of knew that we had the 12 that were going to be on the package, and then we spent a lot of time just like really getting them out exactly how we wanted them.
Are you doing it on Origins?
No, we've set up a different label which would just be called Maritime Yacht Club solely for this.
That's cool. That's
the whole project was sort of done over about an 18-month period in and out. And that was sometimes, you know, twice weekly studio sessions. And it was always really helpful throughout this project to hear how each tune's developed along the way. So we might have done one about 4 or 5 months ago and then revisited it again.
Yeah.
And you've gone in a completely different direction 4 months later than what you thought you were going in. So every tune, you know, we've revisited it, we've gone over it, and it's sort of really grown legs over an 18-month period. So it's been a lot of blood, sweat, and tears have gone into it, hasn't it, Josh?
It is actually. Yeah, towards the end of it, I was pulling my hair out, like, because I'd heard it so many times. I was like, you know, when you go deaf to a record.
Yeah.
And you're conscious of overproducing something and losing the vibe. I really didn't want that to happen. So there was points where I was just like, so over it.
I think that's the point where we have to just switch everything off and come back to it another time, because you can go down a rabbit hole of trying to chase something that isn't there.
Yeah.
So it's always been helpful when we've gone back to it and gone in the next studio session and go, what were we thinking? What were we thinking with that top line? It sounds ridiculous. And same with some of the vocal stuff where we've gone, yeah, maybe a bit overboard with the cheesiness on that one. Let's just tone it down a little bit. So it's really helpful having both of us on the project as well, because we've been able to bounce off each other creatively.
Totally, yeah.
And I suppose with it being a separate project to Josh's other stuff, it's a bit of creative freedom with Josh as well, because we've not just gone down the sort of housey route.
Yeah.
There is a lot of house elements in it, but there's also elements of sort of garage and some sort of ambient stuff in there. So real influence of UK culture in a way. That's the sort of way I'm looking at it, to be honest.
Did you guys have like a third set of ears?
There was a few, wasn't there? There was a few people that we'd send the records to and get feedback. You know, we've got a lot of good friends who are involved in music as well. Yeah. So yeah, it was constantly getting sent back and forth to different people and for feedback.
How do you find getting feedback from other people when it's a project like this? Because I think it's pretty hard, isn't it? Well, it's hard when people know, like, Josh, what you do, and then kind of hearing a whole different project of like, what even is the vibe, what even is this project, what even is the vibe of the project? Like, it's kind of hard to give feedback on that kind, that sense, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I mean, we weren't looking for like real constructive criticism. We knew what we were doing with the music. You know, we're pretty confident in the studio at this point. So we just like wanted confirmation that it wasn't shit, basically.
that's the goal, not be shit, and then we'll be happy.
That's always a good goal, right?
Yeah,
that's the great title of the album. At least it's not shit.
But in terms of style, we wanted it to be really broad and wanted to be flexible with different genres in there. So
yeah,
when we were sending it to people for feedback, we weren't looking for like loads of detail, change this, change that, do that. We weren't looking for A&R, you know what I mean? We wanted our friends to hear it and be like, yeah, this one's cool, this one's not.
How do you A&R it though? What's the process of actually you guys A&R-ing it yourselves and being like, this isn't good enough or this is definitely good enough? Because I think like, I know it's, even having two people in the studio, there still comes a point where it's like, you're both still in the studio and it's still your record. So it's like, how do you get to that point where you're like, this is the best possible record we've made without having external ears?
I think it was just to the best of our ability as producers, you know, and it got to the point where we're like, we're listening to the record. Yeah. We can understand it's still got the, it retains the vibe of the original demo, but we've produced it to the point where it's like radio ready, but not over polished.
Yeah.
I think that was the way I was looking at things anyway.
Yeah, I think it had to feel real, didn't it? Sort of from the overall feeling of the tunes. I mean, there was a couple of times where we'd had a few good sessions. I think there was one instance we called in the demo, we actually called it Pub Tune because before we went in the studio, we went to pub and had a few pints. At the time, we thought, oh, we've absolutely nailed it. This is massive. About 2 weeks later, we went back to it in the studio and thought, nah, delete that project. That's horrendous.
Yeah, that one didn't make it.
No. But we were trying to be quite sort of out there and experimental on that one, I think. But for us, it's sort of... And there's a lot of people who are around us as well, sort of who are maybe not sort of musically minded or they're not into producing that we've played it to, who are more sort of consumers who would listen to a song as such in a similar way to what you're saying around doing the dishes to it. I think having a bit of feedback from them type of people as well is quite important because... Yeah. Ultimately, they're potentially the ones who are going to listen to it as opposed to another producer. You're probably the same as us. We'll listen to it and go, I'm not sure how they EQ'd that kick drum or the snare sounds terrible. Yeah. And it kind of ruins the listening experience for you when you're into production. So I think getting that feedback from people who are sort of surrounding us as well was really important to work on it.
I totally agree. Like, the easy, like, I don't know about you guys. Well, I'm sure you're exactly the same, but like, it's, you listen to like certain records that come out and you're like, that vocal's out of key. Like, why have they fucking put that out? Like, how is that the biggest record right now? The vocal's out of key. It makes no sense. But it's like, I think sometimes you have to remove the like engineer and the producer out of the listening. And you're like, I get why everyone likes it because it's an absolute vibe. And
exactly, mate. People catch a vibe with these dance records, you know, that's what dance music is about. So it really is about keeping that original vibe and still having it produced to the point that it's going to sound good on all different types of speakers for modern consumers, but like still be a little bit gritty and a bit raw.
It's which is hard also when you're writing songs. Like, I'm in the process of writing a project at the moment and it's hard to like push yourself as a producer to where you're writing pretty much different genres of music, but also still keep that vibe and not overproduce it and not turn it into like a pop record.
Yeah. Cause you write some more commercial stuff as well, don't you, Will, on the side?
Yeah, we do. I do a bit. But yeah, it's hard when it's for you as an, I think I find it easy for when it's for somebody else. Cause I can just like take all like the other day I wrote a record for somebody and like, it's practically trance and it's like trance pop 140 BPM that like we would have listened to like in early 2000s. But like, personally, my taste, it's not my taste at all, but it's fine. But I think when I'm trying to do something for myself, it's like, how do I keep that vibe without overproducing it or without turning it into something that isn't what I'm trying to get? if that makes sense.
Yeah, it does. And it's not really something that you can put into words, is it? You know, I think it's just, you just need to trust your gut on these things. And as an experienced producer, you just got to just go with what feels right and, yeah, trust your judgment.
So what's going on with, like, the branding behind this project? Is there any, or is it literally, like, white label vibes?
There is a bit of branding. Like, Jose is taking the lead on a lot of that stuff. Seemed to have a pretty good eye for artwork and visual stuff. So I've let him control a lot of that side of it.
So there's no like boy band photos of you two?
Nah, mate. I've tried to avoid all that. I actually would love it to just be an anonymous project.
Yeah.
But it's hard to do in this day and age, isn't it? With the whole social media thing. It's like people want to know the ins and outs of you know, people's lives. So we've done a little bit of we've not done press shots, but we've like combined our faces to a certain extent and then put effects on it and stuff. But
I think it's really, sorry Jose, but it's like really like underground is not, there's no such thing as underground now. It's either you don't promote your records or you do. And I think like nowadays is you kind of, if you want anything to do reasonably well, you have to give it a chance by promoting it. And if there isn't people want to, with social media, it's so easy to like be in touch with people. And I think people want that personal kind of touch and personal communication that you never used to get. Like we couldn't ever like, even if we were like biggest fans of Spice Girls, right, back in the 90s or 2000s, we could never have got in touch with them. Now you can. Now you can just send them a message on Instagram, which is mental if you think about it. Like some of the biggest pop stars, DJs, film stars are all DMable. And that's how they promote everything. So like it goes back down to even out where we're at. It's like, you have to promote it.
We did a lot of studio recordings, didn't we? So like we set cameras up in the studio and filmed the process of us like recording the records and the vocals. And that was kind of the insight to the personal side of it.
Yeah.
Rather than press shots and the boy band thing.
Yeah. I was just going to say around that, it's kind of like, it's got to be a bit of a balance because we want people to buy into the music. And to buy into the music, you know, they've got to understand a little bit about what the background was, you know, and who we are. But then also we want to get the project into a position where we're going to be doing some of these tracks live as well.
Oh, cool.
And I think you've got to have that element as well, like a bit of a personal touch to it because, you know, on every track I've done the vocals and wrote the vocals and sang them. But also Josh and I have played all the instrumentation into it as well. So we can get it in a position where we can do these tracks live. And I think you're not going to do that if people are completely unaware of who you are.
Yeah.
But it's a similar, I was listening to one of the Duke Dumont podcasts you did.
Yeah.
And it was a similar, some of the things he was saying around, you know, he's one of the most famous DJs that you don't know what he looks like.
Yeah. Because,
you know, he's had some massive tunes, but it's kind of like people buy into that because his music speaks for itself, really. Yeah. You don't have to be an influencer in his case.
Yeah.
Or you don't have to, you know, you don't have to be as such, you know, like a sort of Love Island type character to make it in music necessarily. Yeah. So I think hopefully the music does the talking and we can sort of move from there really.
So going live, how does that look like?
So for me, like I've been messing around since we finished the project, just, you know, trying to do some live looping stuff around and how will it fit in with it. So the live sort of scenario, me and Josh have really got to figure that one out. It's been tough the last few months because he's been in New Zealand.
Yeah.
You know, all the sort of instrumentation, we can play that live and work it around. So putting a live project together would probably be the focal point for us in the next couple of months after the releases start waterfalling out, really. So we'll see how that goes.
I love the idea of, like, it's actually like a band. I was listening to a George Fitzgerald podcast a few months ago, and with Scuba actually, and he was talking about like the hardship of going live, from being a DJ. and how like being a DJ is super easy. You turn up with your USB sticks and you just play whatever and you get paid. Whereas like the live process for him is like, he was talking about what, like how he had to build like a double kind of setup just in case the setup one fails. And so it like automatically switches into it. So there's never any like downtime. And I never really thought about, I knew about the hard ticket side of things where you're like, you're in a hard ticket venue straight away from day one. You're never in a soft ticket venue, like a club or anything. Like you're literally going straight to a hard ticket venue. But I do love that concept of like, it's a completely different scene. Although you might still be in the electronic world, it's just worlds apart. I had Joplin on the podcast, and she kind of started DJing and then was like, no, I just want to go live. And she does it in soft ticket venues. And she's like, it's a fucking nightmare because you go to a stage and like you have to set up your gear around DJ decks and things like that. And it's a nightmare, but it works. But like, I like the concept of just going balls deep into live, not even thinking about the whole DJ world, because it's not. And I think the way you present it is then people will understand it more. Because I think if you went and did a DJ set first, people would be like, oh, they're just two DJs.
I was just going to say, like, we're lucky because Jose is very musical and always play guitar and sang and plays all different types of instruments. So we can really bring that into the live show and hopefully that will separate it. But it's going to take a lot of time. It's going to be a labor of love to get the setup in a place that it's reliable. And like you said, you can tour with it as well, because it's not cheap to tour with all this equipment either.
No, definitely.
So it needs to be slimline to a certain extent, but you know, it's going to be about balancing.
The beauty of it is as well, is although it's electronic music, it's fully possible for a full band to play all of the tracks.
Yeah,
and that's what I kind of love about it, really, because it gives it a bit of a sense of bit of realness as well. So by all means, we can do DJ sets and play them in a DJ set. But also, you know, you could have a full band playing it and it wouldn't sound out of place.
Yeah.
So I think that was the kind of goal with every track, really. Does it feel real? Does it musically? Does it feel like it could fit into so many different pigeonholes, really? And I think that's what makes it feel a bit more sort of personal as well. Like a lot of it is played live in the recording. So yeah, I think that's key to people really taking note of it.
I think it allows people to kind of grasp onto something else rather than just going to see a DJ play as well. It's like, it's a moment in their life rather than, I don't know, for me, because we DJ every weekend, it's like, it kind of isn't as special to me as a live band, maybe. And maybe that's just my opinion. But like, let's say, for instance, Rufus Du Sol, like in the way they have built over the years, it's taken them so many years to get to where they're at, but now they're where they're at and they're filling up stadiums. And there's not many DJs that can do that. Well, there's not many bands that can do that, but I think like hard work and perseverance does get there, and quality music does eventually kind of come through.
Yeah, and I think with a live show as well, there's more room for improvisation, which is what connects you to the audience a lot more. Whereas with DJ sets, although we are improvising, you know, we're not the type of DJ to have a planned set. You're still playing between 3 and 6 minutes of a record that is structured, you know, whereas with a live show, I would like it to be set up in a way where we could just go off on a bit of a solo or change the arrangement at the drop of a hat. Each show would be different to a certain extent,
which is special, right? Is I think it makes it more fun for you guys as well.
Totally.
And I think the audience buy into that as well. I mean, there's so many people who've done that over the years. Like for me, like influencers have been like people like Subtract, where I've seen Subtract do DJ sets many times, but I've seen him do live shows.
Yeah.
And the feeling between the two, it's such a, you know, it's so vast. and, you know, actually seeing a band perform some of his tracks that I would have listened to, you know, growing up in a live environment, it's very different. And I think it depends on the audience as well, but I think as a listener, you can really sort of gain something from listening to them live, and it's a whole different experience. Yeah, 100%.
Totally. Are you guys planning on doing vinyl or like a physical copy?
It's not been spoken about yet, has it? But you never say never, you know.
We're speaking about it now. Let's do it.
We need to see if people connect with it first, and if it gains any traction, because vinyl's so expensive to produce. Yeah. It takes so long now to get it pressed. Mm. It's a huge commitment for us at the moment.
Yeah, I get that. Totally. You could do like tapes.
That would be sick, mate. Cassette tapes.
Yeah. You can get them done pretty cheap now. I think you can. I just think something physical would be sick.
Have you got a cassette player?
No.
Neither have I.
You should do a cassette and a pencil.
Yeah.
And they come together. So you, just in case you wind them up, you need to wind them up and get the pencil out.
That's brilliant, mate. I love that idea.
If you asked a kid what a tape was now, they would have no idea what it is.
Not at all. I was watching the Pamela documentary last night. Have you seen that on Netflix about Pamela Anderson?
No.
It's actually really good. It's a really good documentary. Fuck me, she's so hot. Like, Jesus Christ. Like, back in the day, she was so hot. But they filmed everything. Like, her whole life, she filmed everything on like camcorders, and I was like, everyone used to do that at some point. Like, I know we do on our phones and everything like that, but it's never kept. It's always just like there, and we never like regurgitate that content. It used to be like you had it on a physical form, and then you'd go and watch it, and you'd be like, oh, can you remember that day? Like photos, you'd print out photos. We don't do that anymore, do we?
That was the same with the Kanye documentary, right? Where that guy was following him around for 10 years, filming everything.
Well, with the project, we did that, didn't we, really? We set up GoPros. So the majority of the tunes that we made and most of the studio sessions, we've got hours of footage. Mm. Really, really for us to sort of document it and look back on it. So there's heaps and heaps of footage that we've recorded throughout the studio sessions.
Some funny moments from them sessions as well.
Yeah.
Especially like the little eureka moments where things have just snapped and fallen into place with the tracks, and we've both looked at each other and gone, yes, mate. It's good to have that on film, really.
I think it's really important. It doesn't happen nowadays. I remember like Linkin Park was like one of my favorite bands back in the day. And when they released the album, they did like a limited edition on Meteora, and you'd buy you'd get a DVD with it, and the DVD was like the making of the album.
Sick.
And like you could watch that, and I was just like, all of them they're all in the studio, and like the whole process, and you just like things like that is just a way to build like a community around the project and bring people together on and make it just more personal, like you were saying, is like get more people involved on who you guys are and attract people that don't know who you are as well, which means that they're more invested in the project.
Well, that is absolutely something we could do with these extended tapes. Or, you know, we've been posting like short clips of it online, Instagram and TikTok, but we should release the extended tapes at some point. That'd be really cool.
Yeah, I think it's like also it's almost like a vlog, right? And it's like, how can you create a really interesting vlog of the process where it's like not just in the studio as well? It's like you guys walking down the street talking about the records in like a really like candid way and like just talking about life. I think it's really important to do shit like that.
Yeah, man. Yeah, it definitely gives people a genuine insight to who we are.
Yeah.
You know, there's a lot of footage we'd probably have to cut out of some of the conversations we've had in the studio. But on the whole, I think it's just, you know, two guys enjoying making music and just having a great time in the studio. And that's pretty much how every session went. none of it felt laborious. None of it felt like, you know, real hard work. It was just bouncing off each other, being creative and having a good time. And the music that's come out of that, it's been great, really.
With no expectations really either, because we didn't have a way to release it at first. We didn't know what it was going to be. We were literally just like in the studio, getting high a lot of the time and just having a laugh.
That's what makes the best times though, right?
Yeah.
Love it. Where did Maritime Yacht Club come from is the name?
It's actually part of the name came from my old housemate, Mike. Who isn't involved with music whatsoever. I went to college with Mike, and he's always been really supportive of my career. But he was always like, lad, you need to make a yacht tune. You need to make a tune that's going to make you enough money to buy us all a yacht. And then, I don't know, it came up in conversation with Jose, and he's like, I really like that. He's like, Yacht Club. I was like, that's a really cool name, that. But unfortunately, Yacht Club itself was taken. Yeah. So we ended up adding Maritime to it as well, because I think you really liked the idea of it being a few syllables, didn't you, Joe? So
Yeah. And some of the songs are sort of, they are kind of nautical in the sound, really. It's sort of, and... I think for us, it started off as a bit of a play on words around that conversation.
Yeah.
And then the intention completely shifted when we actually got down to the music. And, you know, at first it was like, it'd be great to have another got a feeling. But then when we've actually come down to it into the studio, we've not made anything. It's been nowhere near got a feeling. And that's kind of like, it's become more natural, because I think you can never try and replicate something in the studio. Mm-hmm. And when you do that, that's when you start to come up with failures and it just doesn't work out. So in the end, we've just kind of gone, let's just make what we're enjoying at this time and see where it goes. And that's kind of how it's ended up resulting, really. So yeah, it's been interesting.
So
when you mentioned the branding, sorry, Wills, the branding side of it, we've used that nautical theme in a lot of the artwork as well. Mm. Yeah. So like the theme was kind of yachts in space, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Was that just because you were so high? It was just like, let's just fucking do yachts in space.
It's sounding a bit like Mighty Boosh, kind of like journey through time and space. But no, it was... It kind of is signifying like a journey, particularly with me and my personal life and the kind of journey and the battle of being on. So in a way, it's kind of a metaphor for, and I think some of the music, some of the songs, are the feeling of them goes from, you know, some of them are quite happy and upbeat, and some of them are a bit more deeper and a bit more sort of atmospheric. So I think it is, in a way, kind of a cosmic journey. I know that sounds really cliche. But,
we mentioned the word voyage, didn't we?
Yeah.
Voyage. I like that.
We wanted to get that in there somehow. We didn't really. I don't know how we're going to incorporate that word, but that was one of the key words for the style and the style of the music and the branding.
Mm. Do you guys do the branding yourself, or is it, have you got somebody else doing that?
Yeah, we've done it all ourselves at this point.
Love that. Like proper spit and sawdust. Just do it yourself.
Yeah.
It's just like I said, it's, for me, it's just been a creative outlet in every way.
Yeah.
And I think there's a lot of people can kind of take from that. I know personally for me, I feel really privileged to be able to play instruments and be involved in music, because it's a real focus for me. Like, I think if you can, no matter how you're feeling on a sort of personal level, if you're having a bad day, I can pick up an instrument and I know I'm feeling all right after it.
Yeah.
And I think to have that, I think it's quite a privilege, really. So to be able to then, you know, record that and put it into an album, I couldn't think of anything better, really. That's why it's so personal to me.
Yeah, I think for like what you mentioned, like with your partner passing and then being able to do a project like this, it must have been a tough process to, obviously, your partner passing is a massively tough process in the battle before that. But I guess, how is this almost like kind of closure for you?
I think not so much, because obviously grief is an ongoing process. don't think there'll be closure for a very long time, if I'm being completely honest, in that sense. But I think it was more of a way of focusing my energy into something positive. It would have been very easy for me to sit at home and not leave my room and not leave the house. But that's not what my wife would have wanted for me. So instead, I've tried to focus on something, you know, creative, something positive that may have an impact on other people as well. Someone might take something away from the music, or even the approach of how we've approached the project. I think there's something everybody could learn, whether it be music, or I think it's really important for mental health to have an outlet of some sort.
Yeah.
So for anybody who's, you know, struggling to sort of find something that gauges their interest and something that they can just throw themselves into, I think that's the key to being happy.
Yeah.
So for me, yeah, it's really rewarding to be able to, and having a good friend like Josh as well, you know, it's always helpful to be able to have someone like that supporting you as well. So yeah, it's been a tough ride, but hopefully the ride's up from here, really.
Totally, man. Yeah. I respect that.
Well, I'm very proud to be a part of the project and be able to help you through what's been going on. You know, it's been important to me as well to be a part of it.
Definitely. Definitely. I can imagine. Is it almost, does it feel a little bit like therapy for you?
I think I've always kind of seen music as therapy, if I'm being completely honest. Even from a young age, when, you know, you're in high school and you might break up with someone or whatever when you're a teenager, my mum would always say to me, why don't you focus it on music, you know, write a song or do something.
Yeah.
So in a way, I've kind of used it as therapy from being young, really. Yeah. And that's the beauty of music. It can connect with you in so many ways and so many feelings that, you know, you could be having a rough day, I'll put Bob Marley on and all of a sudden you're smiling and happy. So 100%. I think that's the way music can influence you as a person. So yeah, I'd say all music is kind of therapy in a way.
Mm.
I agree. Totally.
Josh, for you though, if you're like in a bit of a shit mood or something like that, or something bad's happened, can you write music?
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Yeah, I can. It's not necessarily going to be any good.
Yeah.
It's the process, I think. The process of focusing on one thing with no distraction and becoming entering that flow state.
Yeah.
That is the therapy, in my opinion. When there's no distractions and you lose track of time, you know, and you know, you're doing a session and you could have been in there 3 hours, but it feels like 10 minutes.
Yeah.
You might not come out with a finished track, but yeah, it's all about the process. I think it's the same with a lot of creative outlets. I've recently been getting into watercolors and painting. So,
of course you have.
I'm no good at it, but it's absolutely amazing for me to like switch off, because I have a busy brain, man.
Yeah.
You know, I have quite an intense career. There's a lot of aspects to what we do as DJs and producers. Yeah. So being able to switch off from that completely and just like now look at a landscape and try and put it on paper. It is a form of therapy for sure.
When are you going to start selling your watercolors?
NFTs coming soon.
Yes.
Only messing.
I think it's a while off that.
I kind of want to do, I bought a bunch of spray paints like a few months ago and some canvases, And I kind of want to do this like project of where you just do a bunch of really shit art and
see if it sells
and put it online for like 30 grand and just see.
Oh, God.
And just like, because
people buy it.
Yeah. And just be like anonymous and just like create a hype around shit art. and see if you can make a shit ton of money from it, just as that's like just as almost like a bit of a I don't know, because there's so much obviously art is down to the whoever's looking at it, right?
It sounds like a social experiment, Will.
This is exactly what it is.
Yeah, but it's like art's so subjective, so like sometimes, you know, it could be like, I don't know, a palette with a heart on it or something.
Yeah.
Somebody can perceive that as being like the greatest piece of art they've ever seen because of how it connects to them. So I think it's a strange one, particularly with modern art as well. And some of the things you see, you think, was people really pay a couple 50 grand for that? But it's same, to be honest, it's same with NFTs. I struggle to get my head around the concept of paying that much money for digital art.
Yeah.
I think a lot of it is around the hype around it. Mm. Almost like a social experiment, really, if you think about it.
I like the whole NFT vibe. I think what happened with NFT, there was a huge boom and everyone got sucked into it. And then it turned into the like Wall Street boys of just like making a fuck ton of money. And the whole concept of it got lost, where it was like actually artist being able to give art is an expensive thing, right? Especially good art gets expensive. And like, I can't afford really nice art from like a well-known artist, if you know what I mean. However, I might be able to afford an NFT, and then you can do what you want with that NFT. And I like the concept of being able to be part of an artist's community, but not necessarily spend 50 grand on something that sits on my wall, if you know what I mean. But I can spend 250 bucks on something that they've done for themselves, and it's special, but I'm still part of the community, but I'm not spending a fuck ton of money. I think that kind of concept got lost in the whole NFT hype.
Think my understanding of NFTs, or what I really enjoy about the concept, is it can be a ticket or like a gateway to something else, you know, like function. Bonus content or whatever you want. It can be an access key in a way.
I want to do, I've got a concept that I've wanted to do for ages, but with NFTs, I don't think now is the right time, but in future is like, do an album or release every single one of my releases is an NFT. So you can sell a percentage of your records as an NFT. So that way you're generating cash through selling the NFT, but also you're creating a community that want that record to succeed. So it then isn't just your record, it's everybody else's record. And then if the record does well, they can promote it. They can do all of that. And if you have the record, if you have a percentage of the NFT of the record, it then gets you tickets to a show, or it then gets you the vinyl, or it gets you something like that. I bought an NFT, and it was a guy called Zevi G. I had him on the podcast, and it was more of an expensive NFT than what you would like. I think I paid like 1200 bucks for it. But with that, you got a sculpture, like a physical sculpture of your NFT. And then you also got like a print of the photo of the NFT. And I was like, just that alone is cool.
I agree.
But it's, when you've just got a JPEG of some fucking clown, you're like, oh, okay.
It's like the principles behind the project as well, isn't it? So like, it's similar to what you said. You know, I've heard of concepts where your audience are almost invested in the project as is, and they're feeling a part of the outcome of it as well, and having an influence on it. So I do get the concept around that. I think where it starts getting a bit insane is when it becomes a sort of prestige thing.
100%.
And, you know, you've got people like Justin Bieber spending millions on one where it takes that then doesn't become a sense of community, does it? It's more of a prestige. But, yeah, I think hopefully if they can revisit the sort of theory around NFTs, because I think a lot of people had lost a lot of money on it. A lot of people gained a lot as well, didn't they? So I think that kind of put a bit of fear into the market a little bit. And in a similar way, crypto did. You know, there was a lot of investment in metaverse coins at one point and kind of gone a bit quiet since then. I think lockdown helped the NFT market a little bit as
100%.
Well. 100%.
Well, it just allowed, I think it allowed a lot of artists to make a lot of money very quickly, which I'm all for, but I think anything made quickly doesn't last. It's like a career in music. If your first record's a hit record, the likelihood of your second record and your third record to be successful in comparison to your first record is fucking impossible. And if you don't build a foundation over years and years and years, like, you can lose that 100%. Josh, you must have felt that.
That's a great comparison, actually. Yeah, of course. I mean, when Got a Feeling blew up, I consciously made the effort to go underground again, because that's what I came from, you know. I came from, like, dingy nightclubs and playing and minimal techno and house music. So when Got a Feeling was blowing up and we were getting offers from Sony to re-release it, and I actually said no to a lot of that stuff and ended up just releasing on Mad Tech, Kerry Chandler's sub-label. Released an EP called No Frills because I was like stripping it back to the basics.
You've done it very well. You've done it very well. There's like a lot of not a lot, but I don't want to kind of throw him under the bus, but there's artists that have had extremely big hits in our world as their first or second record and then tried to go underground and it's just completely fallen on their ass. But I think what you've done is you've created real foundations and real, you kind of get the culture of.
I think I was really, because I was releasing underground records beforehand on recordings at the time was a big underground label, Andre Crom's label, and Hector Kuto's label. You know, I was doing some stuff of that and then Got a Feeling came.
Yeah.
And then I went back to what I was doing before.
Yeah. Yeah, no, you're right. You are right. I didn't know the things before, if I'm honest. I wasn't aware of you. Off recordings, obviously, was huge back then. What happened to Off Recordings?
I don't know, man. But it was such a good label at the time. You had some of the biggest names on Off. Well, Andre Crom seemed to just disappear from the scene.
Yeah. Weird, eh?
Yeah, man.
It's really weird. Guess who popped up in my release radar the other day? Tendrils.
Oh, really? Yo.
Yeah.
Didn't see that one coming.
I know, right? Like, I know he's been releasing, like, ever since things kind of ended for him. But, yeah, he re-released one of his big records the other day.
So it's a re-release?
Yeah. Yeah, re-release.
Walking with Elephants?
No. Sparta.
Right.
It's really weird that.
Yeah, I mean, good luck to him trying to come back from all that. You know, it's not going to be an easy path.
Yeah, it's a tough one. Tough one. The thing is like taking all of the political side and all of the shit that he said, right? Or the one thing that he said and his views, like I completely disagree with them. He wrote fucking great music.
He did, man. There's no denying that. He wrote some groundbreaking records.
Changed the industry. At that time, it was just such a shame, man. Such a shame. I'd really like to talk to him about it.
It's like they say as well. Like, don't meet your hero sometimes because you know your perception of what they've done, and then you know it could be as simple as saying something or having an influence in some way, and then it you know completely shifts the sort of narrative. Around it, and in a way it kind of changes your perception of the music as well. That's happened with a few artists that I've met in person that I really like the music, and then when I've actually met them it's kind of been a bit of an anti-climax, and when I thought it's kind of changed the way I listen to it in a weird way, I don't know.
Yeah,
similar concept really. But
How do you think people would take it if I spoke to him?
I mean, it'd be an impartial conversation on your part, surely, you know. It's a tricky one. I would personally love to listen to that conversation, yeah. And I think a lot of people would as well. And maybe it would be a chance for him to explain himself properly.
Yeah. It's weird. It's a tough one, isn't it? Because, like, I'll be honest, like, even for me, like, saying that I want to have a conversation with about him, a lot of people don't even know, nowadays, don't even know what happened in that situation. But I think, like, people can be like, Will, why do you want to give him a platform? Why would you want to put him on?
Yeah, that's true.
Which is a tough one, but I'd love to a certain extent. I've always loved his music. There's a lot of people like that.
It kind of raises as well the conversation in a positive way, not from his perspective, but actually addressing the issues, because a lot of it does happen, especially in the music community as well. Yeah. So actually making it more of a sort of understanding for the people listening, and I'm not saying the views, I don't agree with the views either, but to have an open conversation about it, I think is quite important.
I just don't think we do that, right? Nowadays.
I agree. I think it is important to do that.
Because yeah.
It might turn into a heated debate. You never know. It could be a tricky conversation for you to navigate.
And it doesn't necessarily have to come out. That's the thing. The conversation can happen and it doesn't have to come out. But I think people need to have tougher conversations in this industry and talk about more shit that actually happens, rather than kind of be... I had a conversation... Eli from SoulClap. He's like... I don't know if you're on his email, but he does like a... He's a big like green kind of into like climate change and everything like that. And he sends around these emails, and he sent one around the other day asking to do like what's it called? A questionnaire. And like, it's a bunch of questions, and then you're like, your name's attached to this, so like, can you actually be truly honest? Like, because, or is somebody going to just call you out on social media and then your career's over? And not saying that happened to Tam Walz, because what he said was just not anything that I would agree with, but you just think nowadays it's so easy just to like to not actually say the truth, because you know the backlash that you're going to get.
I think with like the cancel culture as well, that's what's, you know, in society now, like everyone's too scared of offending somebody in some way. And I think in a way you kind of lose the realness in some aspects of it as well, because I think social media's definitely had a big part to play in that. And it's something as simple as like comedians with jokes, which, you know, sometimes there's a very thin line about, you know, what's offensive and what's actually comedy and stuff. So I think that's had a huge influence on today's society. And I think a lot of the younger generation as well, they're a bit more clean cut, aren't they, than some of the older generation. So it's having that a bit of balance, I think, is really tough.
Well, I remember like growing up and listening to like Oasis and Blur and like what they would just talk about each other, let alone like everything else, and like there's none of that now, is there? Like everyone has to like each other.
But that's why people were so like addicted and super fans of people like Oasis, you know. That's why they've got such a massive fan base, because people are drawn into a bit of conflict and controversy as well.
Well, guys, we know what we know what the answer is. Start talking shit on people.
Start having arguments on stage, Josh. Should we try that one?
Jeez.
It's so sad as well on the other hand when you look at Oasis. Everyone is so desperate for that to happen. And there's no money in the world that, you know, there's no monetary value on it for them. It's all about being as stubborn as the other, which is such a shame if you're an Oasis fan.
It's super sad. For me, it's like... You can't even talk to your brother. Like, that's the sad thing for me, is that I struggle with that. Is it's like shit must have happened that none of us know about. Like, I know there's stuff that we all know about, but there must have been stuff that happened that's just gone on behind closed doors. That it's just like, absolutely not. Like, I won't even.
Yeah, It's deeper than the career and the music. It's come between family.
Yeah, which is dark. Could you imagine like not talking to your brother or your sister or whoever ever again?
Well, the only way they communicate is by bagging each other on Twitter. It's, you know, it's great to read, but it's just like, I suppose the type of people they are like the last generation of true rock stars.
Yeah.
And I suppose around that is being stubborn and, you know, they've fallen out with loads of bands over the years and something really sort of minuscule, like the whole Oasis Blur thing was so exciting for everybody listening at the time, but everyone just wants them to kiss and make up and go back to making music, I think, because it's a real shame.
Yeah, I agree. I guess also the music was so good, they can get away with doing that, right? If your art is so good, you can get away with being a little more controversial. As long as you're not offending people to a certain extent, like, you're always going to offend somebody, but as long as you're not like being disrespectful or something, you'll probably get away with it if your music's that good.
Yeah. Well, I think with Liam as such, like, that is his character. That's what people bought into, because the music's very like, you know, rock and roll, like, we're sort of bad boys and we can do whatever we want sort of thing. So I think it went hand in hand with his character. If Michael Bublé started acting like that on stage, it definitely wouldn't cut it with his fans. So I think it depends on your audience, isn't it? But, you know, I think it makes sense why he behaves the way he does when being a rock star, I think.
Yeah, we don't really get rock stars anymore, do we?
No.
Are DJs the new rock stars?
There's a few names that spring to mind. I'm not going to mention any, but I can think of a few rock star type DJs.
Go on then, hit me with them. Come on.
Well, okay.
We need some clickbait.
One gig in particular. Like, I was 18 at the time. I went to Chabuku in Liverpool, and it was like a dubstep night. So Scream was playing, and Banger, and. I mean, Scream is still one of the rock star type DJs, isn't he?
Yeah,
but 100%. I remember him being stood on the stage, drinking a bottle of vodka, and he got on the mic and he was like, if you fuckers don't dance this record, I'm just going to keep playing it. And so he kept rewinding it, until it was like really fucking going off. And that was one of the most like DJ rock star moments I've seen personally.
That's the biggest bull moment. That's the thing, isn't it? It's like people aren't really like that. I'm not like that. Like,
I could never do that.
No, fuck.
Scream's a fucking legend for that, isn't he?
He is. He's one of the best. I played back to back with him last year in Detroit, and just like how he is on the decks, how he is in person, just like there's just like a demeanor around him in the most positive way. But when he gets on the decks, it's just like, we're just going in, no matter what.
Animal.
Yeah.
Did you see his post the other day? Someone was telling him about basically saying to go research dubstep.
Yeah, I saw that.
I'll go research it. Like, not knowing you're basically the founder of the genre. Like, it's just, I suppose that's kind of the scary thing, is like, with music, someone who's been around as long as Scream as well, like, music comes and goes in cycles.
Yeah.
Like, there's a whole new generation of people that have no idea about, you know, Midnight Requests and all that. So,
dude, yeah.
It's almost like now as well, like, some of the stuff in the charts, you know, it's almost like bounce and donk sort of coming back again, hard house.
Donk is back.
Donk is not many people know this, Will, but me and Josh, that was like our first love of electronic music. We were both heavy donk heads.
Fucking northerners. Of course you were.
Yeah. So it's like crazy to see it becoming like in the charts and commercial and played on Radio 1. Like,
yeah, it's mad.
Even like, it's subtly donk, like that Shaq's last release on Patrick Toppin's label is basically a donk too.
Oh, 100%.
And it's absolutely massive. So it's quite interesting to see that come around. Maybe we'll have to do a donk album for the second one, Josh.
Yeah, mate.
Or never Gabba. Say never. I follow this guy. I'm mates with this guy called Little Texas. Have you heard of him at all?
No, mate, never.
Oh, my God. You have to follow him. So he's like, I've told this story a few times, but I'm going to tell you again. I went, my old manager, she got married in Texas, and they're like a big, like, fancy dress couple. And they were like, we're having a fancy dress wedding, so everyone has to turn up in fancy dress. I was like, cool. I hate fancy dress, so I'm just going to go as a Peaky Blinder. So I just put a suit on. It's easy. And they, anyway, on my table, there was a guy dressed as a cowboy. And he introduced me, super nice guy. And then he was like, oh, I'm also a DJ as well. And I go under the name as Lil Texas. I was like, cool, I'll follow you. I went on his Instagram. I was like, wait a minute. You're dressed as a cowboy now, and on your Instagram, you're dressed as a cowboy every single day. And I was like, okay, cool. He was like, what do you make? He's like, hardcore. And I'm like,
yeah.
I was like, what BPM are you writing? He's like, 200. And he was like, I did a remix of Britney Spears the other day, and it was like 400 BPM. I was like, what? But also, he's got this thing. It's almost like a troll. He's almost like a troll, but like, his level of production is actually really fucking good. You'll listen to his records and be like, sonically, these are actually very good records. And he's like, always gets naked when he DJs. or he'd just play in his boxers. And then he did a tweet when, during COVID and everything, when EDC got canceled, he was like, if EDC happens and I play my set, I will get naked on stage. And then EDC happened, and he literally just got fucking bollock naked on stage.
No.
Yeah, bollock naked on stage with his cowboy hat over his dick. And I was like, this is so good. I don't know where I was going with this. I don't know how that started, but yeah.
Oh my God. I think we were just talking about like hard dance and...
Oh yeah, yeah. Yeah.
And John
hardcore.
I think he did a record. Let me pull this up. Like... his Instagram is just fucking genius.
I'm going to follow this guy.
Lil Texas. He's blown up massively. But he does like 1,000 BPM. Like, listen to this. That's...
I can't hear it.
That's literally... It's almost just like a tone. And but because it's so fast, it's just there's nothing else. It's just a but
it's like they call it speedcore, don't they? Have you ever heard speedcore?
No, what is this?
It's like an insane version of GABA. It's like 1,000 BPM, and it's just like a kick drum time 1,000 BPM basically. It's insane. Yeah, check it out. Speedcore. It's like a whole genre around it, but
it's getting big. This is the thing. It's like he's got like 100,000 followers on Instagram, and he's like selling tickets, and I'm like, okay, I know this whole heart, I know music's got harder, and which is quite interesting with what you guys are doing, where it's like way more chilled and way more listenable, and then you've got these cats doing like 1,000 BPM, but like there seems to be scenes popping up where like everything's going way harder again.
Yeah,
it's really interesting.
Have you seen some of Justin Jay's videos he's been posting lately where he's just playing like a full-blown donk to even American crowds and they're absolutely lapping it up?
He's like a troll as well. He kills it.
Yeah. But I love that, man, because I think it's like, you know, it's just, as an audience, you're like, what is this, what he's just played? But yeah. I think I might be into it in a weird way.
Yeah.
So I think it definitely... it's translating into different audiences again, because there's a whole generation of audience coming through that may have never heard of Donk and the like.
Yeah.
And now all of a sudden they're like, they're into this mad genre of music that's famous from Wigan sort of thing. It's crazy.
Yeah. I had Hannah Lang in the studio the other day, or Hannah Lang, however she pronounces it. I always get it wrong. Sorry, Hannah. But like, she's blowing up in the UK right now, like on another level. And I was like, what is it? Like, what happened? Like, when did it switch? And she was like, I played Trick at Creamfields. And then she was like playing me clips of the set, and she was playing like Spice Girl remixes and shit like that. And I was just like, it makes sense, because the kids nowadays that are going to clubs missed the whole of COVID going to clubs. So, of course, if they listen to like a Gabba, if they hear a Gabba remix of fucking Spice Girls, they're like, I know this and yeah. I like this, and we put yeah. them together and now I found my favorite artist.
Yeah, it's nostalgia
exactly.
as well as yeah. like danceable, yeah. like you can't deny the energy of dance music, especially like Donk, Hard House, you know, yeah. there's so much energy packed in there.
But in a weird way though, it's like so many nostalgic tracks are coming, like being resampled, like the last 2 years, I feel like everything's been sampled, yeah. you know, the songs in the charts recently, you know, all sampled as old house tunes, and it's like we're almost coming back in a cycle again. But I mean, there's an element of nostalgia to it where I think, you know, there might even be people at the rave whose parents liked that song the first yeah. time it came around. So I think there's an element of that where I know that one, but I think as well, it does limit you a little bit creatively. I think like there's got to be a mixture. I think of it's a hard one the way it is at the moment. I think with the sampling culture.
Yeah,
well, I think that was part of the reason behind this record that me and Jose have done as well, because everything's original. We didn't want to go down the sample route really. We wanted to write something from the ground up, and you know, it's more personable then.
Yeah, I agree. The whole sample thing is just out of control right now. I don't want to talk shit on it because I've sampled records over the years, and I've had some of my biggest records as samples. But it's for me, it goes back to what we were saying, Josh, with you guys with Got a Feeling. It's like, now it feels like people are just using samples just to be successful.
Yeah,
It's how you use it creatively as well. Yeah. I think that's a key part in it around sampling. Like some, you know, all of the best hip hop songs, you know, are all sampled. But I think the important bit is how is it used and how can you be creative with it. There's a lot out there, you know, where it's just basically a kick and a snare and a hi hat over yeah. a sample of a tune, yeah. which. It can get a little frustrating, but you know, people are making careers out of it, so no shade on them for it. But
how long will those careers last, though?
Yeah, you're right.
It's like you said with hip hop. Like I know we're probably not allowed to mention his name. Fuck it, Kanye and Jay-Z, the Otis record where they sample Otis Redding, and they did it in such a fucking amazing way. And they made such an amazing original record out of an amazing original record as well. And I'm just like, that's what I'm not getting with what's happening now with sampling. Yeah. I'm not getting I'll be honest, the only person that I think did it insanely well at the beginning of this era of resampling was the Akraes record, Do It To It, where it was like a bit baity of a record, but if a record does like 500 million streams, it's clearly a great record and it's done something very, very well. And I think that's how that whole sample culture started again, because people were like, oh, he did sampled a couple of R&B records, now we can do it. But no one yeah. really did it in that way.
I mean, it's so easy to do with Ableton, you know, the algorithm of Ableton puts everything in time for you.
Yeah.
I remember when I first started making music and tried to sample, I had to use Sony Acid Pro
yeah.
and go in, like the time stretch algorithm yeah. and that was terrible, man. But that was all we had at the time. And it would take a whole day
yeah.
to get a 4-bar sample in time.
Sounded dope though.
Yeah. Gritty as hell yeah. when you got it right.
Do you know what I think a lot of it is as well? Like a lot of DJs are making edits
yeah.
of samples for the set. And then with the TikTok culture as well, like there'll be a video of them playing it in a set and then that just grows legs.
Yeah.
And a lot of people are sort of releasing off the back of a viral video, aren't yeah. they? So I think that sort of the way social media is having a heavy influence on that. They want to catch the hype while it's hot, don't they?
Yeah, there's softwares now that major labels use where it monitors what's popping off on TikTok and on what's popping off on Instagram, and they literally log in and go, this record is hyping right now, or this sound is hyping right now. Then the majors go and find the artist, go and put a stupid offer in, make a fuck ton of money out of the record, and then bin the artist off. It's wow. mental. It's mental what's going on at the moment. You're not creating an industry full of amazing artists, put it that way. Like there's no longer big album deals with majors. It's just short, short, sweet single deals and a fuck ton of money.
Certainly not. Not a side of the industry that I want to be involved in anyway.
Nah, not at all. It's very... Well, I think we're fortunate, right, where we've been in it for so long that, like, we have nothing else to do, right? If it doesn't work for us, we're fucked. So, but we've been lucky enough that we've built foundations and we will always have a career in music in some way, whether it's doing what we're doing now or whether it's doing something else. Whereas I think there's a lot of artists, and I've got friends that it's happened to them where TikTok has given them a platform and, or social media has given them a platform. They've grown very big, very quickly. And then when something didn't work, they get spat out and then they're at square one again, fucking wondering what the fuck to do.
Yikes. Yeah, it's a scary situation to be in.
Yeah. Yeah, it's rough. But we're lucky. We're not in that situation. I think
longevity is really hard to find these days as well. And I think, you know, with the approach we've made with the music and there, like, we've not made anything to try and catch a hype or anything like that. The music we've made is just because we've enjoyed making it.
Yeah.
There's a purity in there that's not necessarily in other releases at the moment.
Yeah,
I would say.
I agree. I like it, boys. It's really nice to kind of hear a fresh project that feels authentic and organic and come from a right place, rather than looking at the commercial side of it and how do we break through to make a fuck ton of money, which I think is happening a lot in this. Which I have no issue with people making money, I think, at all. And I don't have an issue with people being successful, but I think I do have an issue with the speed of turnaround of careers, where it's just not healthy for human beings to have that.
Yeah, people need to do the reps and earn the stripes, you know. There's a reason that saying exists. You've got to put the time in to master your craft.
I think it's also just mentally, like, on a mental side, is I don't want artists to be... to be given this, like, spotlight and this hope for a very short amount of time and they're sold a dream that's never going to be fulfilled because it's all based on one record that they didn't write and they sampled a 90s hip hop record, like, that they also didn't write. So it's like, it's tough.
It's a false sense of success, isn't it?
Yeah. And it's easy to be successful when, if you've got a couple of hundred million views on a record or streams on a record, like, people don't realize that doesn't last forever. And you're giving a lot of that away to the labels. And it's tough. But just got to keep going, eh?
Yeah, man.
Go on. It's like one thing to the next. Like, one week it could be all about that tune, and the next week another video comes out and everyone's forgotten about the hype on the other one. So I think trying to get down that route, yeah, I mean, everybody would love to have a viral video of one of the songs that they've created.
Yeah.
It's what's gone into it behind the scenes. I think that's probably where the longevity comes from.
Yeah, I agree. And I think it's about building foundations and just being true to yourself. Let's say, for instance, like, I know everyone's talking about him and people might be bored of hearing about him, but, like, Fred again, like, how he's done what he's done. And I know he's had a very rich history in music. He's one of the biggest pop writers ever out there in our generation. So he's had a huge foundation before he was Fred again. But how he's released his project and how that's kind of... the foundations have built and how organic it looks and it's been presented is so amazing that it's created something that's really created culture. And there's not
many, literally taking over the world.
Yeah. And there's not many artists doing that right now. There's not many artists that are actually really creating a culture, which is it's nice, which is why it's really nice to have this conversation with you guys. And, like, you're creating something that people aren't doing, which is important. And
you know what? And with the Fred again situation, like, what I think a lot of people have bought into is him as a person as well. Yeah. He comes across as quite a nice guy.
Yeah.
I really love some of the concepts around, you know, how he's come to fruition with a tune, and he's, you know, sampled people that he's met on his journeys and stuff like that. And people have bought into the personal element of the creative side about what he's doing. And, you know, I think that's really come across. That's why I think people like someone like Fred again will have a long, he's already had a long career, but now people are seeing, you know, this guy seems like a really nice person. I want to see more.
Yeah.
I think that's quite important, really, because it'd be quite easy for him to be an absolute dick.
Yeah.
But it comes across quite impressionable on the stuff I've seen. So it's important.
I think it goes to show how important social media is as well. There's artists that have had, in our industry, that's had multiple huge number one records and don't have a social media following because they don't want to do it, which is, I respect, but also that slows your career down massively. And it's like, people need to know who you are as a person and get to know the person behind the music. And if you're not willing to do that, like, Fred has created something really interesting. Look at Fish, right? Look at John Summit. Like, whether you like the music or not, Dom Dolla, all these guys, they've all created something. That Charlotte DeWitt, to a certain extent, Peggy Goo, like, they've not just created music, they've created a brand around themselves, which is a certain, it's their personality. Whether it's an act or whether it's not, it's still part of their personality.
It's an extension.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's an extension of them, isn't it?
Which you can't ask everybody to do, because not everybody is a character, right? But you can do it in your own natural way, and it's just working out what ticks and what people want to hear.
Sure. Yeah, and in our case, you know, it's like us just being daft in the studio making beats. It's like what we've always done since we ever met, you know, but now we just put it out into the public space.
Yeah, I love it. Guys, we've just done an hour and a half. Let's wrap this up. Thank you. How can people get involved with the project? How can people follow the project, etc., etc.?
Joe, do you want to give the social media?
Yeah, so obviously we've got the TikTok and Instagram, Facebook handles, Maritime Yacht Club.
I'm going to follow you now.
They'll start seeing, you know, our first release on my own is out on the 24th of Feb. So from then on, we've got a busy release schedule, one a month for the next 6 months after this first release. So, yeah, we'll be all over the internet from then, really.
Sick. I can't wait, lads. Let me know if I can help. When the full album's out, can we do like a full-on listening session with the album and like go through every record?
Oh, would love that, man. Yeah. Would love that.
Cool.
Please.
Let's do it. I want to do like I want to be like Zane Lowe and just like have a...
Let's make it happen, man. Literally. Nice one.
Cool. Yeah. That'd be awesome. Let's try to do it in person as well, if we can. That'd be fucking amazing. We can do it. Get it all cameraed up. That'd be dope.
For sure. Well, I'm going to be back in the UK from March. So we'll talk about our gig schedules, Will, and make sure we can all be in the UK.
I don't think it really matters when we do it, because the album's going to be out forever. But it would be nice to get it. This comes out in April. Maybe let's get it out for the summer and get kind of more hype around it, and let's get growing. Do you know when the full-on album is going to be complete and out? Well, I know it's complete now, but fully out.
It's completed. When is it going to be out, Joe? Is it July or August?
Yeah, we were aiming for the summer, really, weren't we? So it was dependent on the influence of some of how the singles have done as well on the timings of it. Yeah. So, but we're aiming for the summer.
Sick. Well, let's keep the conversation going, and when it's out, let's do it.
For sure.
Cool.
Cheers, lads. Keep safe. See you soon.
Nice one, Will. Cheers. See you soon, mate.
And that's a wrap. Love that one. Hope you enjoyed it. Keep safe. Share it. Send it to your mates. Send it to your mum. Send it to your gran. Whoever likes it. Keep safe. See you next time.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.